Into the sweet spot lineup logic. I'm your host, Mike Alexander, back from vacation. Got the batteries recharged. I'm joining Alex Remezowski and Jared Smith this week. What's going on, guys?
Not much. Doing pretty good. Happy to have you back.
Yeah, man. Yeah, Jared, how you doing?
Yeah, it's nice to be back. A good thing I didn't get kicked off after last week's performance. So it's good to be back, especially with Mike in the fold now.
Yes, sir. And you can get all of us on Twitter. I'm at @Roto_1. Alex is at Donald. Is at Donald Remington these days?
Yes, it is. Yep.
Never sure what your handle is at the moment, to be
honest.
Yeah,
I had to like put some of my actual name in there just to give myself credit for all my amazing tweets.
There you go. And then Jared is at Jared Smith CNY. Of course, you can get lineup logic on Twitter, as well as join the Patreon to see our cheat sheets, all the content that we produce outside of the podcast here. Just go to patreon.com/lineuplogic. And you got Alex's model in there with the cheat sheet. And I didn't get to play much since I was on vacation, but I heard the model was fire last week, Alex.
Yeah. Saw a couple pretty amazing results in there in the Slack chat, which was cool to see. Personally, did kind of average last week, had some luck, but I'm still in the race for that Fantasy Golf World Championship ticket that I have not yet gotten, which really sucks because I've had some big weeks this year, and apparently I just wasn't in the right place at the right time, which is definitely a thing. So now I'm going to spend a ton of money on that this week and probably regret it, but
chasing
that's okay.
Fires.
Exactly. Yeah. Like you got to try.
How was your week, Jared?
Yeah. I struggled last week. We talked about, you know, with the WGCs and the no cut events, how it is so tough sometimes to kind of nail down your lineups, because you have to have lineups that have guys in the top 20, top 15. I mean, we're all getting six for sixes. And if you're not getting there in the bottom tier of my guys, which was Chapel, Hoffman, and I can't remember, and Cook, I just couldn't catch fire. They just couldn't do anything to move up through the weekend. And they really cost me in the end. So got to reload this week, but there's nothing to be ashamed of. I don't, you know, I'm not a big roller, so I'm not, you know, when I say reload, I'm not reloading a whole lot. So it's kind of nice to move on to this week.
Yeah, it's always strange the week before a big event. Obviously, this week we've got the PGA Championship coming up here, the 100th PGA Championship. Why don't you jump in and take us through what we can expect, Alex, at the course and the event in general.
Yeah, so I know we just kind of brushed over last week real quick. I guess I'll just mention before we fully get into the PGA Championship, last week Justin Thomas, if anyone didn't catch that, came away with the victory. And it was kind of annoying because I think we all knew he was super underpriced on DraftKings. And then it really got to the point, like what Jared said, it got to the point where he was, what, like 8,800 on DraftKings, meaning obviously people are going to just know that he's a pure price play and you almost got to have part of him just in case. Like, he hadn't done anything crazy lately. But for Justin Thomas at that price, if you didn't have him, if he's going to win the tournament in a no-cut event, it's going to be extremely hard to make money without him in your lineup. So that's really what it came down to.
In that kind of situation, I always think back to what you say is, you know, you either need to be completely underweight on the guy or very overweight. And, you know, a guy like Justin Thomas, I think overweight was the way to go. And obviously that's in hindsight, but
yeah. And personally, I was definitely not overweight on him. I was quite underweight, in fact, and pretty much the few lineups that I did have him in ended up being pretty decent and just so happened to be the ones that I entered a couple of the bigger tournaments in, which resulted in pretty much a break-even week for me, which is okay. Yeah, so that's really the main takeaway. And then you got some other guys that pure course tournament history guys, Kyle Stanley and Thorbjørn Olsen, who I think we actually mentioned them both last week. Kyle Stanley's had a pretty good year on and off so far. And then Olsen is now a member of the PGA Tour and seems to be making a name for himself pretty quickly. And then, you know, closely behind were some big names that I think people expected to be there. Jared?
Yeah, just jumping on Stanley real quick. He was the one name I did mention last week that I did not play. Like I said, I only played a couple lineups and I had to make a decision. Was it Cook? Was it Chappell? Was it Hoffman? And usually I'm a Stanley guy. I usually play him pretty consistent, but I was like, I got to fade him a little bit this week, and it cost me. That's the one regret I had from last weekend. And yeah, your boy Olsen, I was considering playing him as well and just didn't pull the trigger. But yeah, Stanley is the one that really made me feel bad last week because I was pretty good on the list. List had a solid week. And then, you know, I had a Rory Fleetwood lineup that really didn't kind of come to fruition at the end. And then I had a Tiger. I can't remember who I had paired with Tiger. But that lineup, Tiger Fowler lineup that, you know, made away pretty quickly. But yeah, Stanley, if I had Stanley, it would have been a profit week for me. But like you said before, like with the no cut events, if you're off on one guy, it can cost you.
Welcome to the content producer's conundrum, Jared. Yeah. It feels like you talk about everyone in your head. You're like, man, I was high on him. How come I didn't play him at all?
Oh, yeah.
all of a sudden, you know, they get a T2 on you.
Right. And you can't spread yourself so thin. You can't play everyone. Yep. I mean, you have to. Yep. I mean, you guys have done this long enough with daily fantasy, and I've slowly started learning this. You just, you got to stick with the guys that you have or what you want because, you know, you can't spread yourself too thin because then you're not going to make any money. You know, I mean, you may lose that week, but you're that's the conundrum that everybody has to play, and it's definitely going to come in effect this week.
Yeah. All right, Alex, hit it. We're in Missouri this week for the PGA Championship.
Yes, so we got the PGA Championship, like you said, the 100th edition at Belle Reve Country Club. Correct me if I'm saying that wrong, but I think that's Belle Reve.
I think you're on Belle Reve. You're on point. Yeah. Yep.
That's what I'm talking about. See, I know what I'm talking about. Belle Reve Country Club. It's a little over 7,300 yards, par 70. So right away, par 70, we're thinking par fours. Par fours all the way, 7,300 might not seem that long, but it's par 70. So talking a little bit of distance. The course, we're not going to have very much information on. It's been kind of in the rotation of upper-end tournaments for quite some time now, but they've been very few and far between and all over on different tours. You got a 1965 U.S. Open, a 92 PGA Championship, and then we wait 12 years for a senior open in 04, another senior open in 2000 or senior PGA Championship in 2013. It actually hosted the BMW Championship, but we'll see in the playoffs a few weeks from now in 2008. And then we got this year. So not a ton to go off of in terms of course history for anyone playing this week. It's another Robert Trent Jones design. So something a little like we saw last week. Of course, I think there are definitely some similarities to last week, but you're not going to want to go full on believing you're following last week necessarily. But with that said, I do like some of the guys that did perform last week. Getting into more of the specifics of the golf course, we're par four based. There's 12 par fours. 8 of them are going to be 400 to 500 yards. Half of those, and then 4 more over 500 yards. So we're starting to look at a little bit of distance here. and then you got four par threes, and they're pretty average. Nothing crazy like we've seen a few weeks in the past. The two par fives are both 600 plus, so if you're going to score on par fives, you're going to have the distance. Now, it's interesting when you hear some of the up-to-date news, which I'm sure you guys have seen around on Twitter and whatnot. You got bent grass greens. They're big greens with, if you look at any pictures of this course, you're going to see hilly, undulating greens, which I know we say quite a bit, but this is more, in my opinion, looking like the green size of some of the courses where we mention that approach shots are going to be really important to at least put the ball in the right part of the green, not necessarily like aiming for the pin, but you got to go for the right quadrant of the green. Yeah. And one other thing that I think is going to be huge this week is everything going on about, so Missouri, it's very, very hot there right now, and they're pretty much having trouble controlling the greens, and the humidity and everything combined with the weather. They actually had a bunch of rain today. One way or another, I don't know how this all combines, but the word on the street is the greens are very slow right now. I think they're going to be trying to speed them up before Thursday and especially the weekend, but weather permitting, it really depends on what's possible for them to get accomplished, but it's looking like they're going to be slow, which has a few different effects. I mean, putting on slow greens is one thing in its own, slow bent grass greens. And then you're going to be looking at approach shots that you, on a positive side, you can pretty much aim for the pin, and you're not going to be dealing with any super quick run over or anything like that. So I think approach accuracy is going to be big, and proximity is going to be big. And some people are leaning distance, some people are leaning accuracy, as always. I think distance is going to be big. Like I said, there's a couple very long par fives, a lot of long par fours. And as I say this, I literally just read something that might kind of sway you in the other direction, but that's kind of my take on it. I'm going to look for people who are above average on driving distance. And then one last thing I'll note is that a large percentage of this course, I think 12 holes or something, actually turn right to left. So they're pretty much dogleg lefts. Mm-hmm. So the course generally favors a draw. And we know there are some golfers out there that hit the draw and hit the high draw, and that should help right now. And then you got the other cut guys, so, or a lefty could definitely come into play too. Brian so Harman. Either one of you guys, any thoughts?
Just a couple of the guys that come to mind, Brian Harman and Bubba.
Yeah. I mean, Phil too. Yeah. He doesn't have like the best PGA championship history or anything. And he has been playing great this year, but we know Phil. Jared?
Yeah, just to piggyback on a couple things that Alex did say about the golf course. The one thing that I noted when I looked at the scorecards, at least the regular scorecards that they have there, is that it usually plays as a par 72 for the members, and then back tees are par 71. But if you do look at the scorecard itself, there are a couple par fours that are under 400 yards. One of them does look drivable, so that brings it down a little bit. And I don't know. I think the PGA does this. I don't know if it's just wanting to have scored a par and not make it look embarrassing. But it does look like a course that plays like a par 71 to the pros more than a par 70, just because it looks like there's more scoring holes possible. So I think coming into this week, you do have to look at golfers that are going to be able to score. Only one of the par fives looks to be somewhat reachable in two, but the other one does. I mean, if you can pound it down there, it does look scoreable as well. So, I mean, and as Alex mentioned too, the par threes, couple over 200 yards, one at like 150, one at 180, depending on where all the tees are at. So that's what you're looking at for the par threes on this golf course. But it's definitely going to be a golf course, like Alex said before. The greens seem to be – they're going to be slower than usual as we're used to for majors just because of the hot weather, and they don't want it to get out of control. It's going to be steamy. It's going to be humid there in Missouri. I mean, if you look at the forecast, it's going to be – In the 90s, it's going to be humid. It doesn't look like there's a chance of a thunderstorm, I think, on Saturday. But when it comes to moisture on the golf course itself, it's all going to come from the dew in the mornings, and that's about it. It's probably going to burn off by like 8 or 9 o'clock, and it's just going to be one of those things where guys who can hit, who can pound it down the fairway and hit fairways – and get good approach shots and have opportunities at birdies, are probably going to make the most birdies and going to be the ones in position throughout the whole week. So I thought that was really interesting looking, like I said, looking at the scorecard. I think, like I said, it's going to play as a par 70, but it's really going to play as a par 71 if you really look at it. So guys are going to score. I mean, you have to be probably 4 or 5 under each day to kind of stay with the leaders. Now, the cut line, we don't know what the cut line is going to be at this point. It's probably going to be under par, I would assume, just looking at the course and the way it's going to play out. But you're going to need guys that can make birdies and score points to survive the weekend.
Yeah, and just, you know, between the weather and I guess, you know, some of the course management, I'm just getting a feeling that this could be a little bit, I don't want to say disaster, but just kind of an all over the place week between trying to make the course tough. And, you know, they're getting just dumped on right now with rain, and it's probably not what they were hoping to start the tournament. So things could get weird, which.
Yeah, I agree. It looks cursed. Everything that's coming out, it looks cursed. Earlier, someone posted on Twitter a sign that said, due to expected high temperatures and high humidity over the next couple of days, green speeds will remain slower than they are planned for the championship rounds. So who knows? Like I said, they're going to try. They're going to try to fix things. And one thing I want to throw out before we're done talking really about this course is Kip Henley. I don't know if you guys saw this tweet, but it was pretty recently. It was sometime this evening and tonight. Tweeted out, he's Austin Cook's caddy, so he's been on the course at least a day or two now. This is kind of long-winded, but I think it's actually very, very helpful and something to think about. It's almost like he's throwing it out there for us DFS players in the world. He says, bombers always have the advantage, but I think the setup this week brings all type of players into the mix. Obviously, being a long track helps the bombers, but wider fairways here at Bellevue actually help the shorter guys. Long tracks like Firestone that have tight fairways and deep rough hurt the shorter hitters. Bombers hit wedges, and a shorter hitter that is trying to hit a longer iron from the rough, shorter hitters barely miss the fairways where the sprinklers make the rough the deepest. Bombers have wider misses and get to where it's drier or even where the fans are standing and end up having better lies. On top of wider fairways being a plus for shorter players, the greens aren't bent and can't take the heat, so they have to keep them wet, and that plays back into the shorter hitters' hands. So all in all, I think the scores will be low this week. And bombers have two pictures here really screwing me up. Wider fairways have a plus for shorter players, and greens are bent. So all in all, I think the scores will be low this week, and you may see a few more shorter hitters than usual around the lead. So leaving it very open ended for us, but definitely something to think about.
Well, I think
about.
The one thing about we're talking about weather and conditions, stuff like this, it's, you have to think about it overall in the big picture, in the sense of, like, you remember the US Open. All right. The USJ, as they always do, screw up the course settings. So then you look at what they did at the British Open when it was so dry, so firm, and they did get a little rain here and there, but, you know, over the RNA, what they do is they just let the course play out as is. the USGA at the US Open tries to dictate what the score is going to be. The PGA themselves, I think, is going to implement a little bit of both. What they can't do is they can't have the course burn out. Like, that's the them being in where they are in St. Louis, you can't have a burnt out golf course there. And then just the PGA just doesn't deal with those types of golf course. So you're going to deal with a course that is watered, obviously, and to stand the heat. So it looks pretty. But they're also not going to tailor-made the golf course and make it get out of hand, like the USGA did with Shinnecock. So I think that's why we're all saying it's going to be lower scoring, because what the PGA is going to be is like, you know what, here's what the golf course is, here's how we're going to make it play out, and whatever score wins, wins. I think they're going to be more of an R&A type of attitude than a USGA type of attitude. And I think that's always been the history of the PGA is, you know, it can play tough at certain golf courses, but in the end, they're just going to try to put on the best show possible and make the golf course look pretty as possible. And that's what they're going to do. And they're not going to make the greens unfair, because, I mean, we all know if we are playing golf and it's really hot out and the greens are burning during the day, it can get really unfair. And I'm telling you, the PGA is not going to end up what the USGA did at Shinnecock. They're going to make sure these greens are in the least conditions to where they're scoring and it's not unfair to the golfers.
Yeah, the greens were downright brown. That was ridiculous. But all right, let's let's jump in here at the top tier with guys. Let's take it from Tiger up, starting at 9-9, and see if you're going to pay up, who you should pay up for. You want to kick it off, Alex?
Yeah, I guess to start, the two guys at the top of the top are really the two guys I'm interested in here, and then obviously a little Ricky, because I'm always a little interested in Ricky, especially in a major.
I don't think a week goes by that we Dustin don't Johnson mention Ricky, and so just go ahead and get him out of
always
the
way. Always yeah, going to be Team Ricky. Everyone's Team Ricky. Nothing wrong with that.
Everyone, yeah. Yeah, and that's funny when you're looking at like betting odds
when
and stuff.
When he finally wins a major, it's going to be like Mardi Gras.
Yeah, everyone's going to be happy.
Oh, yeah. Everyone will be happy and everyone will have money in their pocket.
It'll be this one.
Hopefully. Yeah, so like I said, with the just really taking everything we said into consideration about the course, it makes you think of some of these disastrous courses, these tournaments that just like go awry, and obviously someone's always got to be up there at the top, and that makes me think like, what kind of player are you going to be looking at with just any condition? It's like almost taking everything like out of consideration. You're looking just at the player now, and you got to consider Dustin Johnson, who is seemingly just always right in there. Even last week when you think like, wow, like that DJ fade or that going underweight on DJ, that was a great call, like this is going to be a great week, and you think that for 2 days and then bam, like he's right back in the mix. He's always right there, he's always going to be right there, and I think he's got a great price this week at 11-4 compared to some of these guys around him. Like if you're thinking about paying for Rory and you love Rory that much, like he's not priced that much higher above him. So with that said, two guys I really like are the absolute top two price guys, Dustin Johnson, and I cannot help but think about Rory this week. I don't like to think about Rory. I don't like to put this much faith in him because it normally turns out bad when I do. And that's pretty much coming down to the US Open. But or was that the Open? The Open. He did fine in the US Open, but the Open. No, other way around. I faded him in the wrong one. Yeah. So those are the two guys I'm really looking at here. And then Ricky, I think I'm okay on Jordan Spieth right now. I'll continue the fade Jordan Spieth. Like he's coming around and we know what he's capable of in a lot of these tournaments, but just not feeling it as much as I am the other three. So DJ, McIlroy, Fowler. Those would be my picks.
I'll say
top.
One thing on Spieth, though. I don't think you're off on continuing to fade him, but you know I'm a little bit obsessed with hot weather golfers, and he's a guy who can play in the heat.
That is a like very good point. I remember we had 2 or 3 weeks where we deep dove into those stats, and I think it actually worked out pretty well, if I can remember correctly. And it looks hot out there, as we've mentioned, and humid. And Tiger Woods, with his sweating problems these days, we'll get into that in a minute. But that's a good point.
Tiger has to pull the shoulder up on the shirt.
Oh, I feel like a million. When Molinari won before the major he won. Jesus, I'm getting everything all mixed up. Was it the Quicken Loans? Yeah, Tiger, I think, changed his shirt 3 times in the round. And it was like people didn't really notice, but they mentioned it on TV. And they were like, Tiger with another T-shirt change. Colorless shirt change. But yeah, all right. So I think, Spieth, that's a very good point. But if I'm targeting anyone up here, I'm leaning DJ and Rory. I feel like Rory's going to break through eventually, but DJ is the safer option.
I do like
option.
Rory on the bent grass.
Ownership.
Yeah, the putting is what kind of gives him fits, and he's better on bent, I think.
Yeah, and one last thing with Rory is the right-to-left ball flight. Like, he's got the high draw that should work out perfectly for this course, and it's kind of hard not to take that into consideration. He's also had very good PGA Championship history he's gained more strokes than a lot of this field in the last 5 PGA Championships, and he won in 2014.
Jared, you have any interest in Tiger Woods? Because I know Alex does, so we have to kind of exclude him on this one.
Well, I from last week's podcast, I have been playing Tiger really since since he's shown a lot of form. He has been a guy I've been playing, and I'm a type of fantasy player that once a guy kind of shows that, I'm going to stick with him. So I will have some Tiger Woods in my lineups this week, no doubt. You got to play with him. Just put the ball striking and all the stats that line up just seem to be, you know, just trending towards him, you know, being there at least. The biggest issue, obviously, this week for, as you guys mentioned, for Tiger this week is going to be the heat. And that's not saying that he, you know, he plays in a Florida heat all the time. He plays at his own golf courses. The issue is more of age. This is just common knowledge. I mean, even I go out there and I'm, you know, in my 30s and I walk 18, you know, or 9 or 18 holes during a round. And I if it's humid out, man, it's brutal out there. And
it drains you.
It drains you. And that's why, you know, guys like Tiger and Phil this week, and this is like one of those gut things you just think about. Like, I just think about those older guys being out there in this brutal heat, and not saying that they haven't played in heat before, but it's different, and especially different under major pressure. So
I really hope Phil has the long sleeve. Oh, shirt
yeah, I don't. I don't think he's going to be busting that out this week.
If they pay him enough,
he might have to change his shirt 18 right, times.
And then just real quick points on Dustin Johnson and Rory. I think it's one of these weeks where you really got to decide, are you with DJ or are you with Rory? I'm a big Rory fan, so I want to ride him, but I think I'm going to ride him in my one and done this week. I still have him in my one and done. And as I've done all season long, if I pick a guy in the one and done, I'm not picking him with DraftKings or any DFS guys. I like to play that kind of hedge game. So I think I'm going to ride with Dustin Johnson. All the stats point towards Dustin Johnson of being, you know, just a sure thing to at least get into the top 15 or top 10. And then Spieth, he's just so bipolar. It's just it's so risk reward with him. You have to be like, all right, I'm picking Spieth, and I know it's going to be a bust, or I know it's going to be a roller coaster of a weekend for me. And then Fowler, you're always going to pick Fowler just because everyone loves Fowler. I love Fowler, and it just you just hope he's going to win, but he's always going to be popular. So you always have to weigh all those things. And the one thing I did notice too, with especially with these top guys, isn't it interesting to look, especially in DraftKings, is there's only four guys above 10,000. Like, usually for majors or all these big events, there's at least five, six, maybe sometimes seven guys that are in the 10K range, but we don't have this week. So that's going to be interesting too when it comes to ownership. I don't know how that's going to play out. And that's one thing that's trying to driving me nuts.
Yeah. And then Ricky's one of them. And we talked about this a couple weeks ago. You know, part of the DraftKings pricing algorithm, you know, you assume has to do with their win odds. And Ricky gets poor win odds for the bettor's favor because so many people bet on him. You know, Vegas doesn't want to take a bath when he actually does win because of the volume of bets they take on him. So that pushes his price up, especially in big weeks.
Right. I just think that, like, when you look at it, if for those top guys in the top, you know, in the 10,000 or more, or if you're starting a Tiger, it's like, man, it's going to be so interesting to see how people play this out, because DJ is going to be popular. Rory is going to be like the guy that people want to jump on for the lower ownership. And then no one's going to want to play Spieth. Everyone's going to want to play Fowler. And of course, Tiger's always favorite. So, like, what does that do to the rest of the field ownership wise? Like, how are people going to build their lineups? And that's just going to be so fascinating to see when the ownership percentages come out once everybody tees off on Thursday.
Yeah, and then just to wrap up this tier on Tiger, you know, I'm glad you brought up his age, and the reason I say that is he might really feel the pressure to get this one done, because I know he's had a pretty decent comeback here, but he's getting up there. You know, I don't know how many years of truly competitive golf he has left, and he's probably starting to realize that himself. So he might be saying, you know, I don't know how many more majors I'm going to be competitive in. I need to get one done here. And he's the kind of guy that can persevere. I think the winner of this tournament this week is going to be a guy who can persevere through all the crap we talked about, weather and heat and you know, interesting conditions and course decisions, and the, you know, fanfare that comes with being the final major of the year. So I'm interested in Tiger a little bit.
Agreed. Let me just throw this out very quick. This is another push notification that came to my phone at some point today. Tiger Woods taking ice baths, stretching to help with inflammation ahead of PGA Championship. A quote I'd like to read straight out of this article. It's just that there's going to be certain days that I'm not going to have the speed and the flexibility and the movement that I once did, Woods said. I'm 42 now, and I've had four back surgeries, so things are going to be different day to day, and it's just about managing it. I didn't really have those issues when I was early in my career because I didn't have a fixed point in my back. My knees used to hurt a lot, but I could play around that. Playing around my spine is a little bit different. Well, kind of scary, but this is Tiger Woods.
Well, it's scary too, but you have to... Another thing too is you can point in the positive. If it's hot and warm, their back is not going to be an issue. Like you know, the back is going to the back shouldn't be stiff. The back shouldn't be. It's, you know, it should be okay. So that's the one thing you'd be looking at. Like, well, if I'm thinking about worrying about his health and his back, well, in the 90 degree heat, I don't have to worry about that. Like, everything's going to be nice and loose.
All right. So then like you pointed out, Jared, in this 9K tier, we've got some studs because there weren't a lot of people priced up. Anybody have a particular $9,000 golfer that they're hot on?
Yeah. I mean, I kind of narrowed this from like the 8.5 up until the high nines here, and I do definitely have some guys I'll be targeting around here. Two of them that I really do like this week. I'm gonna go like my actual favorites here just for the sake of time and everything, and two guys I'm gonna be looking at quite a bit are Patrick Reed and Jason Day. Both I think are going to be like good to go ownership wise, like play them wherever you want. If you believe in them, Jason Day just always plays well in the PGA Championship. We know what he's capable of. We saw him for the first, like, over half of the season, and he was like quietly dominating everywhere. I know I say it every time, but like, I just don't think he was getting the recognition for what he was doing, whereas some other guys were getting priced up, their odds were going down. Jason Day has just like quietly been right in there, and then he kind of, he had like a few starts where maybe it wasn't like the greatest thing in the world, and then he's kind of coming back on us here, and he finished T10 last week, T17 at the Open. Like, he's kind of just playing in these bigger events, but he continues to perform. And that combined with just like what we were talking about, like block it all out. Like, who cares about the spots on the green or the rain here and there and the different conditions? Like, Jason Day strikes me as a guy who's going to be able to play through all of that. And then Patrick Reed, I'm just like really taking the big event, kind of the major performance here, and I'm going to stick with him because I've loved him this year. Obviously, he won at Augusta, and I think it's pretty accepted now that this course is going to have certain features in terms of distance and layout that are similar to Augusta, but at the same time, it's going to be like condition-wise, maybe the complete opposite of Augusta. But one way or another, those two guys, I think ownership-wise, price-wise, taking everything into consideration, I'm very interested in.
Yeah, and Day can definitely play in the heat. The Aussies typically can. And like you mentioned with Reed, big events, he's found another gear this year with a fourth at the U.S. Open and winning the Masters. And he was respectable at the British Open as well, the T28. Jared, who do you like in this tier?
Of course, you have to look at Justin Thomas after his performance this last week. He just kind of, you know, ran off the way from the field. So, but it's like one of those things where everyone's going to look at it. It's like, well, can a guy win back to back? It's only happened a couple times in the last few years. Like, Phil comes to mind in what, 2013, and then I think Tiger did it once, like a while ago. Like, winning before you win a major is very rare to do, but it seems like, you know, the stats bear out that, you know, he's a good guy. Koepka obviously is always a good play during the majors. He just seems to be, I think moving forward, he's going to be the type of player to have in your lineup in majors no matter what, because he just seems like he just reaches another level when it comes to major championships. So I will be looking at those guys. I probably will be playing a little bit of each, especially if I decide that, you know what, I'm not going to play the top four or five guys and I'm going to go more balanced. I'm probably going to start with Thomas and Koepka. The funny thing about it is Rose has been like a darling throughout the whole season, and it just seems this week everyone has a question mark surrounded him, and I know he's dealing with a little bit of an injury. Right. So, like, and that's the thing about, you know, the fantasy. If, you know, in the fantasy community, is like, the guy's going to be highly touted for a while, but if he doesn't, it's like same thing with Ricky. Like, he's going to be highly touted, but what if he burns you and continues to burn you? No one's going to talk about you. But Rose has been steady, you know, all season long. And I know he's dealing a little bit of an injury, but it's just interesting to see like how he's really not getting too much of a talk this week. And obviously Fleetwood, Molinari, the two hot guys, and Molinari is more hot than Fleetwood, but Fleetwood's just been steady throughout the last 6 weeks. It's really going to be interesting when it comes down to it. Like, you can't pick all four or five of those guys. So which ones are you going to ride?
I'm really interested in Molinari this week. His ownership does not look at all
right.
Like, because he had a T39 at the WGC, you know, that course didn't really set up for him, I don't think. And where I think here, just hitting into these giant greens, like that's when he was playing some of his best golf. Just get it on the green and putt well. And the European guys.
The only thing that concerns me with Molinari is just his fatigue factor. I know he's playing really well, but he's just played so much in, you know, he's just trying to stretch that great play as much as he can, which you can't blame the guy. So,
I totally agree with actually both of you. I feel like I skipped right down into the lower section here, but Justin Thomas, I'm like very, very, very interested in him. Like, it is kind of like He won last week. He's the defending champion. It's pretty tough to like think that that's actually going to happen, but you know, it actually could. So like, you know, I'm leaning towards Justin Thomas, and then Brooks is a guy that I agree. I like to talk about him in every major. You look at his PGA Championship history. It's another just amazing one. And then Justin Rose, price play big time. I mean,
a cash game, like anchor.
Yeah. Do you have any information on the withdrawal last week? Cause that was something I kind of honestly just saw. He was withdrew in a timely manner, which was nice.
Yeah, I mean, it was back spasms, and those are hard to tell. Like, that's not a long-term injury. And sometimes that's even code for, like, I don't feel great. I need a day off. I got back spasms.
Yeah. See, that's kind of what I thought. It's just interesting when you see that with a WGC event, but it makes sense because he wasn't necessarily even in the country. So, like, I mean, you could hit one shot and, like, make a bunch of money, but he's Justin Rose, so he probably doesn't really care that much. And then I'll mention just Tommy Fleetwood. I'm leaning towards what we were talking about, I think, 2 weeks ago, where it's like, people love him. I love him. I want him to win. And it just, like, keeps happening. And then he does something, and then he fades away. And it's just getting very annoying. And it makes me want to stop playing him. And then last thing I'm going to say on this pricing tier is Molinari. I am also like 9,200 for a guy that's playing as good as he is. And then you put in with that, on top of that, like his PGA Championship history, great runner-up last year. And then I read that thing from Kip Henley saying that you don't necessarily need to be a bomber here. You know, it's a not necessarily the fastest greens, whatever. He's like an approach guy. He's not going to get bogeys. He's going to put it in the fairway, and then he's probably going to put it closest. He's going to have plenty of opportunities for birdie. And that just like, I just keep thinking about that. And you just think, how could he possibly underperform here? And he's like, I don't know. He didn't strike me as someone who's going to like flare out and be tired. Like Jared made a good point. He plays every single week and he's been playing every single week for a while, but I'm definitely interested. If I had to narrow it down in this group, I would say JT, Molinari, and then Day with a little bit of Reed runner up there. I'm still definitely interested in him. All of this ownership kind of will tilt me one way or another, but that's who I'm focusing on.
And then a guy that's kind of lost in this pricing tier is John Rahm. And you know, if the soft conditions will allow a golfer to overpower the course a little bit, Rahm is the guy who's going to do that.
Yep. Just like I always say, John Rahm is a cheap version of Dustin Johnson. So, And he continues to live by that, like 9,100 to 11,400. They're very similar golfers in my book. It's just like John Rahm is trying to make that name and get up to a consistency factor where DJ is now. So another guy that's hard to kind of overlook there, but he's been playing okay. He's very on and off, but it's a major. You get some good ownership on him, and it is interesting. He does get kind of lost there.
Yep. And then this tier ends with a couple of cash game favorites of mine, Henrik Stenson, Alex Noren. I don't think either guy has a great shot to win this week, but I would expect them to both be top 20 and give you solid value for middle eight pricing.
Stenson's pissing me off lately, personally. I'm just like, I actually have not been referring to like hard stats a lot lately in these podcasts, which is something I'm kind of back and forth on. But if I'm looking at Stenson here in this model I pulled, which he's ranking out like pretty decent overall, but like the two glaring weaknesses are, first of all, one thing I looked at was strokes gained short game on bent grass greens, and not looking great there. And then the other stat that like I think is going to be pretty important here, and it's birdie or better percentage. And then I kind of threw in a couple conditions on top of that to fit this course. 112th in the field, and like just putting him in my roster week after week and then following along with him, he is like such a par guy. Like he might be avoiding bogeys, but it gets very, very frustrating to see someone like, you know, a double bogey, 15 pars, and then a couple birdies. And it's like, okay, you're in the mix, you're going to do fine, and then he'll go a few under par one day, and you might see him in the top 15, but it's like DraftKings scoring-wise, like, that's not very good. And like, this is the first probably bad thing I've ever said about the guy in my life. So...
Well, he did have the wrist thing before the British Open, so that could still be a
And he's been injury stricken kind of all year. It's like been a little bit of this and a little bit of that. We never really know, but I don't know. I'm starting to like kind of go cold on Stenson.
Gotcha. All right, the Norns, your cash play.
then I know he's your cash play. Low-y.
Whatever Swede do you want to choose is.
Then moving into the low eights, high sevens, there's some interesting names down here. Some guys who were older golfers that have had mixed results. Some younger guys like Finau. Who do you like here, Alex?
Jared, I'll let you kick off this range. You have any thoughts?
You know what? It's interesting. It's like for years, or even years that we've been doing this, like Sergio has been the guy that like has been steady Eddie, that you can put him in your lineup and you know he's going to be, you know, he's going to at least make the cut. He's going to make a bunch of birdies for you and he's going to have a chance at the end. This year has been like, you can't even count on him. I hear you there. I understand that completely. I got a 2.5 year old here at the house and I completely understand it. But with that said,
get him back next year.
He is going to be an interesting play for me. I think I am going to roster him just as like a percentage play, just because he did play okay. He did. No one's going to play him. And he, you know, it is a major, and he did play decently last week. I know he finished in the 30s, but he did. I tracked him a little bit last week, and he played a little bit better. The slower greens, if it's, you know, pounding down the fairway and putting it on the green and not worrying too much about the speed of the greens and putting, I think that's definitely going to benefit him here. So I think percentage wise, I think Garcia is going to be a good play in like the big GPPs. Like if you're doing the Million American and stuff like that, obviously the chalk's going to be Cantley, Shoffley, Finau, Casey, you know, everyone's talking about Bubba as well. So, like, this range is definitely going to be the chalk range I see. Other than, you know, Phil, it doesn't seem like everybody's going to be playing Phil. I always like to play Phil just because I know he's going to get me birdies and he's probably going to make the cut. But I think just the gamble play is in this range. It's like if you can find a Garcia or Phil that can outperform these Cantley, Shoffley's, Finau's, Casey's, that's your big advantage. And if they can do that and you're willing to make that risk, that's your play and you're going to capitalize on it.
Yeah. Going off what Jared said, like I've kind of had that mindset with Sergio a few weeks and it's like pissed me off so much that I'll never play him again. But you do like make a very good point that I took the time to kind of like zero into his stats here. And the one glaring issue is just recent form. If you look at his last 24 rounds or whatever, just strokes gained, total strokes gained, it's like it's horrendous. It's horrendous in the field. It's horrendous no matter what way you spin it. Now, if you try to pull out some positives from that, you're looking at top, like in the 30 range in both birdie or better percentage, on this type of course, which might bring you back to when he was playing a little better. I've brought this up before that pre-Masters, like Sergio looked like he was, he was right there in it every single event, and then it just went south. Probably, I believe that was right around when he had the kid, right? So that's also a very good point. But, and then you look at long-term ball striking, and when I say long-term, it's 36 rounds I'm looking at in the last year. So it's not really long-term, but it's season-long, which brings in some of his better play. He's top 30 again in this field. And then when you look at strokes gained approach, which is tied in with both ball striking and birdie or better, you could say is tied in there. He's right there too. So he's got the ball striking. He's got the approach. Really, the only thing that's killing him is just his, actually, putting is not great either. But we've seen him have certain meltdowns in so many events. Like, you think back to the Masters when he got 13 or whatever it was. Like, it's these meltdown moments. The Open, he was right there about to make the cut. I think he was over the cut line, actually. And then it was him and Hideki. I get them mixed up in that because they both let me down at the exact same moment. But he ended up going like 3 over in his last like 2 or 3 holes, which was him and Hideki both did that. So, you know, if you avoid this moment, this one moment in each of these tournaments, maybe he makes the cut and then maybe he's able to do something from there. With that said, I am leaning toward the fade here, but he could be an ownership play. He could be a price play. 8,500. It's interesting, but there are some guys around him that are much, much, much more safer, much more safe. And below him, like, you could save 1,500 in salary and go with someone who I'd much rather play here. So enough on Sergio. Cantlay, I agree. Jared, I think he's going to be a little chalky, but I avoided him completely last week because I thought it was kind of coming out of the blue and I thought people were getting hype on him for kind of no reason. And he followed it up. He finished T6 last week. He's statting out again very well this week. For me, like, he's right up there in terms of pretty much everything I've looked at, just behind Justin Thomas and Dustin Johnson, which is very interesting for someone who's priced at 8-4, but a chalky. It's almost like when I see the stats favoring Cantlay, it makes me want to get away from him. Another thing I wanted to throw out there at one point tonight is Fantasy Labs. They did a very interesting article on differential for major performance for the people in this field. So pretty much going 2014 to present, how these individual players perform on your average tournament as compared to a major. And Cantlay is in the negatives there. So believe it or not, Cantlay does not perform above average in majors, as I guess you could probably guess. But a couple of the names, Xander Schauffele, 8,200 this week. One of the things people really revert to with him is he plays good in big events. I wanted to ride that narrative last week, but apparently it wasn't the right kind of big event. He was there. Like, his finish ended up being quite awful, but like, he finished T2 at the Open. He was there in the Masters, T21 at the Greenbrier. He's been playing well. We know he will.
T2 at the Players.
Yeah, T2 at the Players. So I'm very into him this week. I thought that was interesting. A couple other names in that little grouping there for kind of heightens their game for majors. Brooks Koepka, as we could probably guess too. Louis Oosthuizen, who, again, you never think about him until one of these events. Tony Finau, Ricky Fowler are kind of the two other big ones there. Ricky Fowler loves to come in second in a major. Top five makes you think he's going to do it, goes 1 or 2 over, and then, like, eight under the next day, but comes up to short. So Finau and Schauffele, I think they might both have some ownership this week, but I really do like both of them. Cantlay stats out well, but he's a guy I always think twice about.
Always does.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, he's always right there. And I, like I said, I'm probably going to think twice about him. But if I had to choose two, it would be Xander and Finau. And then that brings us down to Paul Casey, Bubba Watson, who I think are both very much in play. Yeah, especially Paul Casey. Paul Casey, I mean, he's a cash guy for me. It'll be interesting to see how high owned he is, but it's another great price. All three of those guys being Xander, Finau, Casey, fantastic price for all of them. You could put them all in a lineup and then just like fill in the next three, and you're looking pretty good for at least having a few guys up there in the top 20 or so.
Yeah, no, none of those guys is going to be owned very high. Probably low teens on all of them.
I'll take that all day.
Yep. What are you doing with Kuchar? He's been all over the board lately. You know, he probably profiles well here, but...
Let me see exactly what he stats out for me, because honestly, I've been like... I used to just be like a Kuchar make-the-cut kind of guy, but I mean, me as like...
Ever since his like back nine on the opening round of the U.S. Open... went to crap, and since then he's mostly been terrible. I mean, he did finish ninth at the British Open.
Alex, if you're looking up the stats for Kuchar, they're not going to be good. I'm just telling you.
I mean, you're pretty much spot on.
I know they're not going to be good, but it's just it's a feel thing with Kuchar though. Like, he's one of those feel guys where, I mean, this year he hasn't played well at all. At least he hasn't been the consistent Kuchar that we know. But he has been there in spots, and we know when it comes to major time, he's probably going to make the cut more than likely. I mean, that's usually always, he's a great grinder for the cut line. And then we know he has the material to make that a weekend charge. That's one thing we never really talk about too in this, you know, the fantasy community, is like the ability to make the cut and then also be able to perform on the weekends, because how many times have you rostered lineups where you're like, all right, this guy's all right, cool. I got this sleeper guy at six or seven, low sevens, high sixes. That's awesome. And then they don't do anything when they make the cut. And it's like, well, you might as well miss the cut. Like, there's no point. The important thing is too, is when these guys do make the cut, is to actually be able to make a run on the weekends as well. Kuchar can do that. Like we said, Phil can do that. I mean, if you're going to think about rostering these guys that have the ability to throw up a low round on Saturday or backdoor a top 10 or top 15 on Sunday, like Paul Casey's a perfect example. We saw that at the Masters. Like, he always seems like to be the guy that is struggling near the cut line, but eventually on the weekends, once he's there, he knows how to perform. And it's just weird to see these guys. That's why I say, like, you know, Kuchar, I'm probably going to play him this week. Not a high percentage, but I'm going to play him just because he's showing a little form. And there's always that ability that he's going to backdoor a top 10 like he always does.
Mm-hmm. The classic Rory McIlroy. And what you said about the Masters is just so true with Paul Casey. I remember sitting there, I was home with my family that week, and I ended up having a pretty good week during the Masters this year. And it was so funny because I remember Paul Casey was like right there, like cut sweat if there's ever been a cut sweat. And I was just freaking out with, like, in front of my entire family. He was like, what the hell is this guy doing? Like, Paul Casey, who gives a shit? Like, and I'm like, trust me, if Paul Casey makes his cut, he's going to do something with it. And then sure enough, Sunday, just like, he's right there. Well, he shoots up the leaderboard, and I look like a genius.
Justin
Rose. Kind of like the Brock. Yeah,
Justin Rose is a perfect example, too. At the Open, it was at the Open. Like, he just barely makes the cut and then completely changes the whole daily fantasy field, because he makes the cut at a high percentage and then makes a huge run on the weekend, and it completely flips the whole field. I mean, there is something to say to roster some of these older type guys that had these major experiences where it's like, as long, I mean, we've seen Lee Westwood do it, like, even last year, like, a couple times. Now he's probably not going to do it this year, but, like, we've seen these guys, you know, show up, make the cut, and then bang, all of a sudden you're like, holy crap, it's Sunday afternoon, and this guy's got a chance. He's in the top 10, he's in the top 5, he's got a chance to win this thing.
Yep, shout out old guys, Roto Juan here, Mike, he loves his old guys.
Those aren't quite old enough to be the old guys I like. You know, I'm talking like the Ken Duke.
Ken Duke ain't going to flash his head this week, that's unfortunately. Right? Maybe you get the Ted Potter Juniors, maybe like the Web.com Tour legends, but...
I can do Ted Potter Juniors, he's fairly out of shape. So other Alex guy, Webb Simpson, same question, same problem. What are you going to get this weekend with him?
I think he could be right there. I'm actually kind of like, I'm kind of on Webb Simpson this week. He's like a fantastic price for actually him and Mark Leishman. Both of them, I think, are priced like they have just great prices here. And I always mention these price plays, but like they've both been in these situations. They've played the majors. Both of them show some success in the PGA Championship. And we've seen them do quite well in big events. They've gained strokes here over the past 5 years. And I think they're both capable of playing pretty much any type of course. Mark Leishman, you got that Australian, the whole hot weather type thing there, and then Webb Simpson, what he did to Players, what he's really been doing all year, and then he's recently been coming back into form even after kind of being quiet for a while. He at the Open, he performed well, and then he did okay last week. So Webb Simpson, I think, is very interesting at the price, especially if people start to overlook him at this point. Mark Leishman, I like him too. And that kind of brings us down into the lower sevens, which I will wait to hear what you guys think.
Do you think Joaquin Niemann is ready for his first PGA Championship, or is it going to be a little too much for him? Because he's going to be kind of chalky.
Super chalky this week. It's just crazy. If you look at everyone just kind of touting Niemann, and as I know Alex loves him. I've really grown to really like him a lot. I've played him a ton this year. But man, it's really going to be like, do you want to pay for the chalk this week with him? Because it seems like everyone's going to be on him, mm-hmm. which, I mean, completely makes sense. But the also issue is like, you know, it's just the gamble factor. Do you think he's going to be like that one guy that breaks through at the PGA? Because there always seems to be the guy that breaks through at the PGA. Again, you just gotta pay for that. It just seems like he's like the super high owned guy this week that everyone's on.
Yeah, I'm kind of interested in fading him.
I mean, I think it would probably be, you know, if you're a like minded, if you have a good head on your shoulders, you would probably fade him because there's more that can go into a rookie who hasn't played at the PGA Championship but doesn't have the experience, that is high owned and doesn't really have that much backing him. It just makes sense. But if you've seen the guy play and you see how he hits the ball and you've seen his ball striking numbers and you've seen that he kind of has the demeanor to finish in a good position on any given week, it makes him very enticing and very fun to root for. And I just like want to play him, but like ownership is a huge thing there. Like if he's going to be super chalk, it's kind of like the Tiger Woods thing on like when he was like first coming back, like if he's going to be 20-25% owned, like probably not, but like people are looking back to the Masters where he was there and he actually ended up doing okay. And it's like, this guy's fun to watch and holy cow, have you seen him hit that little low draw that just ends up in the fairway? And there's so much to like about him, but it does make a lot of sense to just keep on moving, go on. Like, there are so many options around him that you can easily forget about him and move on. But man, I really have trouble not playing him.
All right. So then getting down through the sevens, you know, we don't have a ton of time to talk about all of these guys. So why don't we pick a few each and why you think they're a good play? You want to kick us off?
Yeah, I mean, if you're taking low sevens, I'm definitely going Luke List, Kyle Stanley. Those are the guys I'm going to ride and die with. I've been doing it all year, and I faded Stanley last week, and it cost me. I mean, these are two super talented ball strikers that do struggle with their putting. But, man, they can bomb it. They can put it in the fairway. They can put it close to the pin. And when they're on, they're fun to watch. Luke List has been, you know, a darling for a long time. But if you just watch him on a week-in, week-out basis, his putting is going to drive you insane. But his ability to hit the ball is just amazing. And the same thing is with Kyle Stanley. And Stanley just seems to be, like, the guy to me who is getting confidence in his game, can really, you know, take his talents. And it's really just those are the two guys I'm really going to be probably riding this week. Obviously, Chapel is going to be pretty favorite along a lot of people too. I like Chapel, but man, it just seems like he's so inconsistent. He's going to be the one like hit or miss guy this week. And Charlie Hoffman is always going to be the guy you can look at usually during majors, and Jason Duffner is kind of the same way. Is like those two guys are usually, you can look at them, you're like, all right, if I need a guy to make the cut, I can pick them. And then just maybe if they get hot this weekend with the putter, it's going to be good for me. So, I mean, though, but yeah, List and Stanley are the guys I'm going with.
What about you, Alex?
Number one for me in this range, I agree with Stanley, first off. A couple guys that I'm very interested in this week. Ryan Moore is one of them. I kind of always mentioned that there was a point in this season that people were looking at Ryan Moore like a top-of-the-line option, and that's very interesting to me. He's gained a lot of strokes in the PGA Championship in his history here. He's played the past 5 years. He's made the cut. His finishes haven't been overly impressive. Last year, he finished T13. He is in decent form. We haven't seen him in the past couple weeks, but in the Open, he finished T12. In the Greenbrier, he finished T13, I believe. I think he's been there. He's not going to have any of those the major championship jitters that you may see from some of the younger guys like Neiman. So Moore is always interesting to me. If I'm looking closely at his stats here, like, he's statting out great too in my very, very detailed model. His long-term ball striking, like, a very, very, very good drives gained, sixth in this field, good drives gained. I can't remember exactly what specifications I put on that stat, but that means he's hitting fairways. And if he's not hitting fairways, where he is playable, and he's pretty much hitting the green from there. He's an approach guy. He's a ball striker. And in majors, this is one of my favorite stats this week, is just, I did strokes gained tee to green in strong fields this year, strong fields being majors, WGC, and then a couple of the other events where we pretty much saw a lot of the big names. Second in the field tee to green at 7400. Like, I am one, like, fully into him. I'm going to see where he ends up. I'm going to be overweight on him. So I like Ryan Moore.
The only thing I'll say about Ryan Moore is if he puts average this week, he's going to win the tournament.
There you go.
If he puts average this week, Ryan Moore will win. I've rostered Ryan Moore. I've followed Ryan Moore all season long in the last 2 years. The issue with Ryan is he will put it close. He's like the unknown Adam Scott to like the fantasy world. He will put it close. He'll have opportunities for eagles all over the place because, I mean, he's spectacular with his long irons. Like this guy, for not hitting it long, he can, if he's, you know, just outside 200 yards with his irons, he can put it close. The issue is he can't putt. He struggles. He's but the times he's really good is when he can, you know, make putts. And if he putts average this week, he will win. But the track record, right? And that's a big thing too. Like it may help him quite a bit. Yeah, I mean, he's gonna be a good pick this week.
Yeah, the two guys. Yeah. That I'm interested in. I mentioned him before, Brian Harman. He's a lefty. He's got a good amount of distance. So he should be setting himself up for some nice approach shots. And he's a very good putter on bent grass. He's got good three putt avoidance, strokes gained on bent grass, strokes gained putting on bent grass. So, you know, he's one of those guys that, like, you know, sticks his head out and then misses a cut and gets a T50th and doesn't do anything. And then all of a sudden he's a top 10, top 15. So I kind of feel like, you know, in a GPP, he's a guy I'm interested in. And then, you know, sticking with the guys that could maybe, you know, overpower the course a little bit, Gary Woodland, he was kind of forgotten about for a while there. He was not playing very good golf. But his last two times out, he's got T22 at the Canadian Open, T17 at the Bridgestone. And, you know, those are solid fields. So I think he's ready to compete again. And for 7K, if he gives you top 25, that's wonderful.
You know who's going to screw all of us all this week is J.B. Holmes. Like, you just know this is a week that J.B. Holmes is going to be, like, showing up. He's like, hey, guys, I decided to play this week, and he's going to bury every putt and bomb every year. It's going to be annoying. Like, that's why I was looking at the list, and you said Gary Woodland. I'm like, oh, that freaking J.B. Holmes. I know he's gonna kill me this week. I know I'm not going to play a single bit, and he's going to be there in the top five.
All right, and is there a pump play either you guys want to throw out, sub seven?
I can definitely, you got to mention here, I don't know if he's going to end up chalky, probably just because he's 6,700, but Thorbjørn Olsen, who is clearly heating up, big fan, and another guy who I know Jared hates and will never roster ever again.
Punt him, get him out. Don't even think about it.
I'm always him. Like lately, he's done good things for me this season, and I'm still interested in him. And I want to mention two other guys, and then I'm done. Ian Poulter at 7,400. He's playing great. He performs in majors. He's a complainer, which scares me this week because he will surely be complaining about whatever grass he is putting his feet on. And it just seems like it's lining up in that direction.
He's going to complain that water is wet this week.
Yes, 100%, exactly. And then the last one, who every time I shout him out, I get scared because I've played him before and it's worked out good. And then I've played him before and he's gone like 12 over in the first round. Wee Kim. That is a full-on punt for you at 6,500.
Yeah, that's Pat Mayo's guy.
Yeah. I mean, it's wee. He's a bent grass putter and he's playing some decent golf. You see him up there sometimes.
I will say one quick name that's really stood out for me in a couple of things I've done on Fantasy National is Aaron Wise has popped a little bit. If we're going down to the lower guys, I know Nick Watney's been a Pat Mayo type guy, but I've watched Nick Watney this week. And then I'm going to do it. I'm going to roster Brian Gay. Yeah. He's just been steady all year. I know it's just weird, but Brian Gay, Stewie Sink, it always shows up during majors, and the Bulldog, Russell Henley, just seems to be always undervalued.
He's 6,700 this week.
We always have
he was on fire.
I know he's always usually going to make a cut, or at least if he you know, he's gonna make birdie. It's just so, it's so weird that Russell Henley doesn't get the respect. Like Berger is above him, and like there's other guys above him, but yet Russell Henley is always down to the bottom. It's like, I'd rather honestly at the value take Henley over Berger. Like, it's just weird how that always works out.
And then for me, guy we got to mention, Andrew Putnam won the Barracuda Championship last week. He was another guy that was really playing well. And a couple of tournaments there kind of came apart for him. But coming off of a win, 6,900.
He's a great strokes gained approach guy. Like, he's going to probably hit the – he hits it decently off the tee. But if he's in the fairway, he's going to put it easy.
He's got four top tens. I mean, one of them's the Canadian Open, the FedEx. Like, these aren't, you know, bullshit fields. They're legit fields. So,
he's been solid. I've played a lot of Putnam this year.
I'm going to do a little bit of quick ownership, and then let's all throw out a winner to wrap things up. Over on FanShare here, looking at what the tags for the week are like. Obviously, DJ and Justin Thomas. That's not unexpected. They're leading the way in tags. Brooks Koepka, Jason Day right there. Just a couple below those guys. Their ownership's going to be high. You know, it's a major. They're very popular plays in a major. Their prices are much better than like DJ. Tony Finau, he's fifth in tags. Great price on him. He's going to be chalky. You know, that's kind of a situation like we talked about where you either need to be overweight on Tony or kind of fade him there and hope that the wheels come off for everybody else. Rory in the list there, sixth. Torbjorn coming in, very, very high ownership projection, being only 6,700. And like Alex said, there's some reasons to like him. Yeah, Tommy Fleetwood, Tiger Woods. This is a surprising name to me. Bryson DeChambeau, who's struggled with that injury a little bit lately.
Punt him. Don't play him. Yeah, don't do it.
I'm on that same page. It's, you know, I like Bryson, but 13th at the Porsche European Open is not going to change my mind about some of the stuff that's happened with him recently. And just looking at the rest of the list here, Ricky. Neiman, Gary Woodland up there. So for a guy that's a pay down, some people are going to own him. Yeah, Rose is kind of buried in there. Aaron Weiss, he's a punt we talked about. He's got some ownership. Stanley, and then Russell Henley. So kind of seems like a little bit of a stars and scrubs approach week, that the ownership percentage projections kind of lead me to believe. So you know me, I like to jump in there in the middle tiers and try and make the most solid lineup I can, get six guys through. It's kind of a tough week for that with most of those names falling down into the sevens. So it's easy to kind of roster guys in the nines and even tens. But I don't think you need to be super worried about anybody's ownership since it is a major. Everybody's going to be owned and it'll be fairly spread out.
Yep. Yeah.
All right. Jared, who do you want to pick as the winner of the PGA Championship?
Yeah, I got to do it. I don't have him available for my one and done. I don't know how much I'm going to play him in DraftKings, probably a lot at the end. But it's going to be Dustin Johnson. He's going to win.
He's the odds-on favorite.
He's going to win. It just everything seems to be pointing in the right direction for him. I mean, but the weird thing about Dustin Johnson is he flies so much under the radar. Everyone forgets we don't forget that how good he is, but like everyone, when it comes to talking about Tiger or Ricky or Rory or Justin Thomas,
it's kind of boring these days.
It's like we forget that Dustin Johnson's literally the best player in the whole world. Like, he's better than everyone, all these guys. I mean, other than I could argue Rory, but like, he's the best player, and on a golf course where bombing it, wedging it, and scoring are gonna be key, he's the guy you gotta pick.
And if you're talking about boring, I'm sure you guys have seen this, but everyone should check out that guy who does the impersonations. is just like,
oh yeah, it's awesome,
absolutely hilarious. His like Ian Poulter, is great. But the, and then the Tiger Woods, it's really tough out there. It was really, really tough out there. That it just gets me every time. And then the DJ is, I've been hitting the ball a long way, and it was an interesting day, and I just seriously check that out. I think he's like working for the Golf Channel now.
I do see, if you want to, you want a little bit more respect for Dustin Johnson, check out the No Laying Up interview with him. They did it, I think, earlier in the season, and it was fantastic. You really kind of get a feel for DJ, like, and why he kind of does what he does during interviews. He just doesn't have time for it, what it really sounds like. But, like, it's a good little pickup.
Yeah. All right, Alex, who are you taking to win?
All right, if I got to take someone to win up top, I'm going – all right. Oh God, I have three people I want to say, so I'm gonna go a top, a middle, and a low, and it's gonna be Justin Thomas, Jason Day, and Ryan Moore.
Okay. Some solid names. For me, I'm gonna pick John Rahm. He's got a whole bunch of top tens this year, and he hasn't won anything in a while. You know, his last win, I think, was like the Open d'Espagne or something like that. So, you know, I think he's better than he's shown in a little bit recently. And he's just got that killer instinct. He's just such a competitor. I think this course is going to allow him to shine through. And I think you'll get some pretty decent ownership on him. So
I don't hate it. And just let me just throw out, if I have to choose one, just because we all chose different people, it's going to be Justin Thomas.
Jason Day Thomas.
I was about to say Jason Thomas. Justin Thomas, that's my pick.
All right.
Mike, before you do sign off, I know everyone listening to the podcast, I know we're running a little late, but I know everyone listening to the podcast, PGA is not all of our favorite major, of course. But I'll remind everybody, it is a major, so it's still awesome. Yeah. It's still fun. But there's two things that a couple things everybody needs to know about major. There are two golfers who never won the PGA, but won the Masters, the US Open, and the British Open. And that was Arnold Palmer and Tom Watson. So those guys did never complete the Grand Slam and really would wish that they won a PGA. So don't bash it. And the funny thing is about, I was doing a little research before, Tom Watson actually led the 1978 PGA at Oakmont. He had a 5-shot lead going with the final 9 holes to go, and he actually lost the tournament. He made a double bogey at number 10 and then shot 73 to give away the greatest comeback in PGA championship history to John McAfee or whatever his name was. No name we'd ever know. But the funny thing about the gentleman that beat Tom Watson for that PGA, believe it or not, he played with Arnold Palmer in his final major championship at Oakmont in 1994 in the final round, because the PGA thought it would be funny, or the USGA thought it would be funny. So I just thought that was interesting. Like, everyone dogs the PGA for being like the most entertaining, the least entertaining major, but we forget that the two of the top 10 players ever to play this game never won this event and would give everything they probably would to win this major. And it's just interesting that I thought those were cool little nuggets to have as we enter into the PGA, to remember that, hey, it may not be entertaining, but at least it is a major, and it is important to a lot of people. Plus Jordan Spieth going for that, the Grand Slam title too.
That's what I was going to say. Jordan Spieth has everything but this. So something to think about.
Nick Faldo as well does not. He has every other one except for the PGA.
Definitely a feather people like to have in their cap, that, you know, it doesn't get quite the same pub as the Masters or the Opens, but it's a big one. So. All right, guys, thanks for being on. You can get us on Twitter, like we said. You can get on the Slack chat on Lineup Logic if you're a Patreon subscriber. go to patreon.com/lineoflogic. Once again, if you want to be part of that, get the cheat sheet, get the model, and get winning. So, good luck this week, guys.
Good luck, everybody.
Good luck.
May the sports be with you.